Somebody just, I'm sorry, what is your name?
Marsha
just raised the issue that when I was reading from Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, the English did not reflect, the English in the article did not reflect what I was reading. So, Judy, I think we had that conversation also, was about what to do with the art scroll and whether it was fair what the art scroll does. So first of all, was it with you or was Miriam?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. So I'd like to first of all read to you, if you have the art scroll, it would be good to take a look at now on page 1263. I only want to spend about 5 or 6 minutes on it and then spend the rest of the time doing readings from Shir HaShirim. It says specifically the translation presented here is allegorical based on Rashi's commentary. The translation presented here is allegorical based on Rashi's commentary. And in fact, I think it is the right, that is, what our scroll does is they tell you right up front that they are going to not be treating the literal text, and they talk about it more, but they're going to translate words based on Rashi's metaphorical understanding of Shir HaShirim being the relationship of the Jewish people and God over a course of history, which ends off in the current exile, which means Rashi's exile of the French exile of or the exile of the 1100s. Rashi, I'm afraid I don't want to take too much time. I did print these out. Well, I guess I'll hand these out. If you're curious, you can look at them. This is the first page of Shir HaShirim that was printed in 1524. It is the second. It was called the Second Rabbinic Bible, or Mikrot Gedolot, and it has become the template for every Mikrot Gedolot, essentially every Tanakh that we have. It's a. Here, let me make sure I don't pass out to my kids. Okay. Coming up. It is later in the Keter Aram. The Keter Aram, the manuscript of the Keter Aram, which is the best Tanakh ever written. You know, bar none, it was simply the best enough, is a manuscript. It was written by the Ben Asher family. If I'm not mistaken, it was Aaron Ben Asher, or his son Moshe Ben Asher, I don't remember. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Do you have enough? I have a few extras. This is written, so Keter Aram Tzova was written in the year 1000, about 980 of the Common Era. So it's much, much older, and it goes back to manuscript times. This is 50 years after the printing press. Gutenberg, who did the printing press?
Gutenberg.
It was Gutenberg, so what, about 1450, 1460, 40, somewhere in that area. You're teasing me. So this was not the first Bible to be done. The Jews always have embraced technology. That's why you can find the whole Tanakh online. So as soon as Gutenberg came out, the Jews were thinking, ooh, man, this will look good in a Tanakh form. Unfortunately, it's caused all kind of errors because the person who put this together was a guy who was later Meshumet. First of all, the publisher was a Christian. His name was Bamberg, because he was a friend of the Jews. He certainly employed a lot of Jews. He was a nice guy. He was no anti-Semite to the best of our knowledge, and he knew there was money to be made off of selling Bibles. So he did. So he hired a guy named Felix Apprentice. And Felix Apprentice worked for him and created the first rabbinic Bible, which A, wasn't all that good, plus Felix Apprentice converted to Christianity. The book didn't sell for obvious reasons. Then he hired a guy by the name of Ben Adoniahu. You should have known you're in trouble already with a guy named Ben Adoniahu, who put together the second rabbinic Bible, didn't finish it. He became Christian as well. Now, if you're wondering why all those people are becoming Christian, you got to remember what life was like in the 1500s in Venice, in Italy. Life was miserable. The people we hear the stories of the people who gave up their lives for the sake of Judaism, and there were plenty, but it was a choice between that and people just wanting to live. I mean, you couldn't live as a Jew during those times. So Jews were dropping like flies. I don't mean to get off the topic, but it reminds me a little bit of what Rav Soloveitchik said about the state of Israel, how the state of Israel saved American Judaism, because in 1943 and 44, so the Christians were all over the campuses of the United States, and they said, they made a pretty good argument. If your God still was with you, you couldn't possibly have this kind of Holocaust. It's hard to argue. It's really tough to argue. If it wasn't, and it continued on that way until 47, 48, and then you could turn to something that says God must not have abandoned us, because if he would have abandoned us, there wouldn't be a state of Israel. But according to Rav Soloveitchik, I wasn't there at the time, Rav Soloveitchik said that Jews were dropping like flies, on the campuses of America during the 40s, during the early and mid-40s. So here, too, the Jews were dropping like flies. Finally, he got a guy named Eliyahu Bachur, who was a frum guy and really put together a terrific Bible. There are some mistakes in the Bible. Unfortunately, they've gotten into our culture. The reason why in the Megillah we read Bifnehem and Lifnehem was because the Mikro Gedolot has it the wrong way. So they read it twice. They didn't know what to do. The original manuscripts have Lifnehem, and Mikro Gedolot has Bifnehem. So you get into mistakes. The problem with the printing press is you can print so many copies, it becomes authoritative even when it's not always right. But I don't want to get off too much on the side of the, I could spend the whole course teaching about this Bible. It's a beautiful Bible. There's a photocopy of the original. It's online on the Hebrew University website. You can take a look at every single page of it. It's beautiful. And if you notice, this little section here, it had Ibn Ezra on one side, had Rashi on the other. And you see this gigantic block here? That's the Aramaic translation. Translation. So you know the Aramaic translation is almost a word-for-word translation. Not in Shir HaShirim. There is not one word of love in the Aramaic translation. It is a complete metaphorization, just like Rashi, or I should say it the other way. Rashi is just like the Aramaic. It does not allow you to even have a thought that there is physical love going on, which means it does much what the art scroll does. I am not going to tell you what the words literally mean. I am going to weave the words into what the allegory is, not what the literal meaning is. So if you want to blame art scroll, you have to blame sort of the Targum first. However, there is more blame for art scroll. As far, that is, I think it's the right of any translator to say, this is my purpose of translation. I'm going to translate every word by looking up the dictionary and inserting the word after it in the Cambridge Abridged, Unabridged dictionary. That's a translation. I'm allowed to do that as long as I state what my facts are. It's a stupid translation, but it's a translation. As long as I lay out clearly what my translating philosophy is, then you really can't hold me accountable. You can decide to use me or not decide to use me. What is reprehensible, however, is their commentary on the bottom, which is this. In the second paragraph, it says, the question is perplexing only if Shir HaShirim is taken literally, but neither the sages nor the commentators take it so. That is false. Ibn Ezra does. He doesn't just take it literally. He takes it literally in the way that we studied here. He learns it at both levels. I demonstrated last week that I think even Rashi does. And at the very least, even if Rashi doesn't, Rashi says that you can't understand the basic meaning, with the metaphorized meaning, without understanding what the literal meaning is. That Rashi says explicitly. It's hard to say whether Rashi believes there's two levels of meanings, although I think he does. But Rashi explicitly says that you cannot come to a metaphoric understanding if you don't know the literal understanding. So to say that the sages nor commentaries ever took it as so, take a look on the second column. All agree, however, that the true and simple meaning of Shir HaShirim is the allegorical meaning. The literal meaning of the words is so far from their meaning that it is false. Wrong. That is false. That is simply a false statement. It's simply untrue. It doesn't appreciate metaphor in Tanakh, but moreover, it doesn't appreciate what the commentators themselves said. Ibn Achanan translated in a literal sense. Rashi translates a little bit in a literal sense. And I'm going to run short of time, and I really want to do at least some readings in Shir HaShirim. And this way we'll be learning Shir HaShirim as opposed to about Shir HaShirim. I have here, if you're curious, Rashbam's commentary. It does not show up. It was a very late find. This was a thesis put together in, I think, 1960. Somebody found the manuscript. There is some dispute about whether this is Rashbam, but most people think that it's Rashbam. Rashbam, like Ibn Ezra, treats both meanings. Both meanings, fully, not like his grandfather did, fully. He describes the love story as love story, and then he describes the metaphorical meaning. So to say that all commentators and that the literal meaning is false, I don't see how you could say something like that. And ultimately, I'll tell you what the real problem with the art scroll is. Rashi is a definition of the allegory. But what we saw before is the minute I give a definition to the allegory, I'm stuck in that meaning. As if Shlomo HaMelech wasn't smart enough to have multiple allegorical meanings. The Kabbalists say that's a Kabbalistic meaning. The philosophers of the time said it was a philosophical meaning. The Rambam talks about it as more Nevukim. He doesn't give much press time to it, but it's clear that he thinks that it's a book of philosophy of the transcendence of the human soul. Kabbalists will tell you different. Historical people will tell you different, but the Ibn Ezra believes that the history starts from Abraham's time. So what happens when you read the translation of the art scroll is that they limit your potential for understanding the text. You see what I'm saying? That's the problem with them. What they do is they short shrift Shira Shirim. They say some things which are patently not true at the bottom. But what they do is they freeze Shira Shirim into one potential understanding. That one potential understanding may be absolutely correct. But to say that it's the only correct understanding, it's impossible. Even Rashi said, there are all kinds of midrashim, I'm going to pick the ones which suit me. But he never told you not to look at the other midrashim. He just said these are the ones that seem to work better with the flow of the text. So what they've done is they've frozen the text into a form where you lose the beauty of metaphor. Because as we were discussing before with Yaakov, so the discussion of metaphor is that metaphor is not simply a translation of reality, because in my mind, it's not just it means A and now you got to mentally translate. I say B, you're supposed to understand A. It's not just that. The metaphor itself evokes images, feelings, spirit, passion that literal translation cannot evoke, simply cannot evoke. So for, I don't know, maybe I want to be Don Lakav's foot on the art scroll. Maybe they just figured everybody could read the Hebrew and would understand the literal meaning. And then they just wanted to give you the English meaning. But I don't think that's what art scroll was trying to do.
Why is art school publishing all these dual language texts? To make the material
accessible to people who cannot read Hebrew. Correct. I want to be Don Lakav's foot. I just didn't say I was naive enough to actually think that that's true. I think they've done an error. What I would have done was on the bottom, would be nice maybe to put the original commentary, you know, to put Rashi's text on the top, but maybe for the harder words and more difficult ideas to give some hints at the bottom or whatnot, to somehow let me know that there's more to Shira Shirim than simply Rashi's translation. But they do not do that. What's that? So try to avoid. And therefore, I think that... So either they believe that the masses really cannot handle it, or they believe that the text is somehow disserviced by physical love. If so, the question is, how do they translate the stuff that we saw in Yechezkel? How do they translate the stuff in Mishle? I'm curious. You know, I never looked. Somebody should open up an article in Mishle and see if they're translating that as a... And you know what my guess is? They probably translate that woman who's after you with her dripping tongue and with her legs that drip death. My guess is they translate it literally, which is wrong in the other way, because then you miss the metaphoric side. So to my mind, I think what would best...
The other way, just
that is, if they translated a harlotish woman or a free woman as a loose woman, then they lost the whole metaphor of it, which is that you're talking about anti-wisdom in this case. So either way, the question is, the minute you translate, you sort of get into trouble. My guess is, if they were being true to their text, they would not have translated Mishle that way. They should have done everything and de-metaphorized. But they probably didn't, because Mishle is a much more difficult sefer than Shir Shirim in many ways.
But on the other hand, kind of caveat to what this lady says, that could be representing what she says, the evil inclination, that anti-
So what? And therefore, how does that deal with the translation? What are you trying to say?
The translation is that's what that represents. It doesn't represent the concept of it just being the woman. That represents the evil inclination.
Right, but if our scroll doesn't translate it that way, then I don't know that. But if our if our scroll comes here to Shira Shirim and says, I'm never going to tell you literal sexual meaning when there is metaphor behind it, so therefore I'm going to take Shira Shirim and I'm going to give you the metaphor. But then I would assume if they give a literal translation to Mishle, then therefore it must be the literal translation, because if they thought there was something sexual about it, they would translate it to the metaphor. So you're stuck either way. You sort of get caught up in an inconsistency which potentially causes misunderstanding. So I don't want to spend too much time beating up on the article, because honestly here it's a little bit too easy. I'm sorry, yeah? That's correct. Well, you could footnote it a little bit. That would have been a little more fair, to give some footnotes at the bottom, maybe two columns in this case. But you're right, Art Scroll has to pick a translation. They chose what they were going to choose. I think what bothers me more is not the fact that they froze in a definition, because any translation freezes in a definition. It does. What they do is they claim that nobody ever understood it in the literal meaning, which is false. That is not fair. That's suppressing it. Either it's intentionally suppressing information, and that's not okay. It's okay for translators to say, listen, there are literal interpretations. Ibn Aknin, Ibn Ezra, they give literal interpretations. And they thought that was okay. But we don't, so we're going to stick to Rashi. But that's not what they say. They say nobody ever assumed the literal meaning is true because the literal meaning is absolutely false. That's simply not a true statement. And that's not unfair. That's unfair for a translator to do, in my mind. That's unfair. That little mission statement, which is on the bottom. It's not the translation which bothers me so much. Or it bothers me as an educator because it's too restraining. It bothers me, this little addendum here, which is simply incorrect.
You have the same problem with the Aramaic translation then as well.
I would, but the Aramaic never said anything otherwise. The Aramaic didn't
really
give you a little...
The
footnote. It's the footnote, which I think is much more offensive. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct, yeah. Yes, you're right.
In general, is it the pattern of not educating to know their different viewpoints?
Yeah, okay. Yes, you're right. We could really go... The truth is, it's possible to really beat up on Art Scroll, but since we're being recorded, I don't want to get sued. We better go actually to Shir HaShirim. So let's do a little Shir HaShirim. What should bother you about Shir HaShirim right off the bat is as follows. And here, if you have your Art Scroll, open up to page 1263 and don't look at the English. And if you have your other text, what page is it in the other text?
What paragraph? We don't know.
Chapter 1, starting from the beginning.
325.
Yishakeni mirishikot piyu kitovim dodeacha miyayin. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his lips, because his love is sweeter than wine. Now, by the way, that's a problem with the metaphor, because love is an abstract idea, and yayin is a physical idea. So how can I compare one to the other? So Rav Sadia Gaon says, dodecha doesn't mean love, it means saliva. Because your kisses, your saliva, is sweeter than wine. So you have, when you're metaphorizing this, I don't want to analyze the poetry too close. We go line by line. But how could I say your love is sweeter than wine? What you're either saying is you're metaphorizing love or you're metaphorizing wine. You can either say your love, the feeling, is stronger than the feeling I get from wine, or I have to unmetaphorize love as into some physical attribute. So the Ibn Ezra actually cites, we don't have Rasag. We have something that looks like the Rasag, but it can't be, because Ibn Ezra quotes the Rasag and it's not the same. Rav Sadia Gaon says that Dodecha is saliva, and he proves it from a pasuk in Mishlei. L'reach shmanecha tovim shemen turak shmecha kein alamota ivucha. Your spices, a very difficult pasuk, but your spices are good for smelling. Shemen turak shmecha, your name, your very name drips with honey. Drips of spice, alkina lamuta hivucha, and that's why all the young women love you. Moshcheni acharecha narutza, pull us after you, pull me after you, and let us run. It's a problem, because how did the me become the we? Heviani amelech chadarav, the king has pulled me into his chamber, brought me to his chamber. Nagilav in his mechabach, let us take pleasure in you. Naskira dodecha miayin mesharima hivucha, we will either smell or remember your love. Greater than wine, your love's greater than wine. They have surely loved you. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful image of a king in his throne with his ladies, and he pulls one or more, this intimate relationship. It's fantastic. But let's read on. Something strange happens. I am black, but I am beautiful, O daughters of Jerusalem. Ka'olei kedar kiriyot shlomo. The way Ibn Ezra translates this is probably the right way, which is, I am as black like the tents of the Bedouins, however I am as beautiful as the beautiful linen tents of Solomon. Al tiruni shanish chachorish shizafatni ashamish. Don't see that I'm dark, because the sun has made me dark. Bnei nicharuvi samuni notir akramim. What happens, my brothers, they were angry at me, and they made me a vintner. They made me watch the vineyards. Karmi shali lo natarti. I couldn't do my own vineyards. I'm a working girl. Hagid ali shavan afshi chatireh. So tell me, my love. Now she's speaking to the beloved. Where are you going to shepherd your flocks? Where will you be in the afternoon? Why should I be wandering around the tents of the flocks of all of your friends? I want to be with you. What's the problem with the first section and the second? Where was the location of the first section? In the first few psukim, we were in a palace. And the woman was princess, rich, covered with spices. The husband was a king. And now we're in the fields. She's poor. She's got a bad sunburn. Her fingers are grimy and cracked. And she loves a shepherd guy. I know shepherd guys are not high up on the economic scale. If you ever view in Israel, so you see every once in a while, poor, like poor Arab boys. If you go to the West Bank, so you see the poor Arab boys, and they're, you know, like 13 years old, taking their flocks around. So what happened to the imagery? Im lo tidi lach, and he responds to her, Im lo tidi lach hayafa ben hashim, silach bekvei atzon uriyik biotach al mishkonot aroim. If you don't know where I am, so take your flock and go shepherd it among the shepherds. Is that a rejection? I thought he was bringing her into her chamber. And now he is rejecting her, or at least pushing her off. Everything changes. Now, the Mefarshim, by the way, all work on this. Every single Parshan, you have to understand the problem before you understand what the Parshanim are doing. Every Parshan is dealing with the fact that the imagery jumps all over the place. Let's continue on. Just when I was comfortable out with the flocks, L'susati b'rechvei faro d'miticha rayati. I have compared you to the chariots of Pharaoh, to the horses of Pharaoh. Navu l'chayayich batorim. Your cheeks your cheeks are as beautiful as torim, lines of jewelry. Torim are lines, but lines of jewelry. Savarech b'charuzim, which means we've dressed you up in these, you know, jewelry, like the hanging, like jewels that come down in lines, and there's beautiful things around your neck. Torei zahavna selach. Let's make you lines of gold. Imnikudot akasef, with little tiny beads of silver in them. Ad shamelach bimsibo nirdi natan recho. And now she's talking. He was talking a second ago. She's saying, until I find the king in his Misibah, his party, let my spice go to him. Tsror hamor dodili ben shaddai alin. My love, she's speaking, is like a cluster of myrrh which rests among my breasts, like a jewelry that hangs down a little bit low. Eshkol hakofer dodili b'charmein gedi. Where am I now? Well, I'm all over the map here. That is, there's no consistency. I get it. We're in love. But I, there's no consistency to the imagery. You have to tie them all together for completeness. I agree with that idea. I do. But what's interesting as we go on the text is we start to get a certain solidity. In the next section, I can't read all of it, but we go on and now we have a bed. They have a bed together, which is a surprise. She calls herself a lily of the valley. He calls her. He says that she's a lily among the thorns. It jumps around until Chapter 2, verse 8. So if you'd open up to 1264, up until this point, there's no story. She has fleeting images of remembering. Nazkira dodecha miayin. The image jumps from inside to outside, to inside, to outside, to inside. There's a lot of description of love, but there's no storyline. It's pure poetry without story. You're like an apple. Your apple is sweet to my lips. You're like a lily of the a lily of this. That is, they're communicating on all kinds of metaphoric ways, but there's no storyline per se. It's really jumping around from place to place until chapter 2, verse 8. Yes. It is very stream of consciousness. And what's interesting is to see the stream of consciousness change. And here in chapter 2, verse 8, the stream of consciousness settles down. So I'd like to read it to you. Kol dodi hine zeba. I hear the sound of my lover. He's coming. Medaleg al ha'arim mekapetz al ha'gva'ot. He leaps around on the mountains. And he leaps around. He skips the mountains and he leaps around on the valleys. Now the imagery should be quite clear. It's a gazelle. or a, some type of animal like that. Domed dodi litzvi. My love is, it's like a heart. Ola ofer hayalim, or he's like a an ofer hayalim, some kind of young ram, or a gazelle. Hine zeh omed achar kolenu. Oh, he's standing outside of my wall. Mashkiach min achalonot, mitzitz min acharakim. I see him, he's looking in through the windows, he's peeking in through the, like a very shy fawn that's peeking in through the side. But all of a sudden, now I've got a place. Things have started to solidify. Anado divi amarli. My husband's, my love said to me, Kumilach rayati yafati ulchilach. Come out and come with me. That is, let's go out together. Let's catch a movie or take a stroll through the garden. Ki hinei hastav avar, because the winter is gone. I know in modern Hebrew stav is fall, but not in biblical Hebrew stav is winter. Hageshem chalaf halachlo, the rains are gone. Hanitzanim niru va'aretz, the sprouts have started to look in a sprout in the land. Eit hazamir higia, very difficult translation. I'll get back to it in a second. The kol ator and the voice, the sounds of the dove, nishma biartzenu, are heard in our land. Now who's talking here, by the way? Who is communicating? Who's saying all these words? Here's the trick. Who's saying, come out with me, my love. Come walk with me. The winter's over. Time to take a stroll. Look at the beautiful flowers. Let me finish it up. You could see it's, by the way, what season are we in now? Springtime. It's the spring. It's the time of love. Look at the tenais, the figs. You can see the figs are not quite ripe, but they're starting to grow. Hagafanim smadar nadnu reach, and the flowers are starting to grow on the vines. Kumi lach, come for your own sake. Rayati afati ulchilach, come and walk with me. Who's talking here? And be careful. It's not quite as obvious as it seems. What? What's that? Who do you think is talking here? Well, no, not the metaphor. I'll just leave it as a love story. We'll figure out what it means metaphorically perhaps later. But the boy or the girl, who's speaking? The love or the beloved? The boy speaking. But not. Take a look at the first line. Kol dodi hine zeba. This is, who's actually speaking this whole first section? It's her speaking. She describes him coming to visit her. She sees her lover come. And her lover, she describes him peeking in and being shy. What a sweet, cute boy. And look, he just asked me out. You know how he asked me out? He said, come and smell the flowers. He's not talking at all. Do you see what's going on here? She says what he's saying. Why is that important? Because the next line, he actually starts to talk. Take a look. The next line says, do you see how there's a little break there in the text? This break is very important. He's speaking now. Yonati b'chagvea sela. Oh, my dove, he's speaking to her in the cracks of the cella that is behind your... Here there is a reference, but not the spiritual reference. He's being described as a gazelle coming to the cracks and looking for the love inside, you know, the stones. What we're actually talking about is he comes to her house to ask her out. So he's peeking in the window like a Romeo and Juliet type of thing and wants her to come out. Beseter hamadricha, harini et marayach. Show me how you look. Hashmiini et kolech. Tell me, I want to hear your voice. Ki kolech arev umarech naveh, because you sound good and you look good. Now he's talking. That's the guy. Do you see? There's a disconnect here. Do you see what the disconnect is? He comes and what does he actually say? Hey, you look good. I want to see you. You sound good. Can you talk to me? Well, let's come on. Let's go. What's that? Exactly. Harini Mariah, Hashmini Kolech, Ki Kolech Arev, Marech Naveh. Come on, you look good, you sound good, come on out. That's not what she hears. What does she hear? Oh, my love, come to me. Let us stroll through the springy gardens. Let us see how wonderful thing is. She hears what she wants to hear. He's saying something completely different. Do you see that? He's to the point. Let's go out. And she's like, oh, love and spring and smells and flowers and stuff like that. They are not communicating here. Or they're communicating, but they're not communicating all the way. Now, I'm not going to get into the metaphor. That is, what does it mean between the relationship between God and man? Because here what I'm going to emphasize is the love story. Because I'm going to hold what Rashi said. If we do not understand the love story, it's impossible to understand the whole point, and this gets to your idea, it is impossible to understand directly the love between God and man. Impossible. So what Shlomo HaMelech did was he said, I'll give you something that you do understand, which is the love between a man and a woman. And if you could grasp your mind around that, maybe you could get closer to the truth, if not the truth at all. And the beauty of it is there's an incredible love story going on here, which really develops. At first, there's no plot. It's just, it's just memories, images, recollections. And all of a sudden, we have a plot line. All of a sudden, he comes to her. And yet, the stories that they're telling are not consistent. She remembers being asked out in the most beautiful, sensual, not even sensual. There's no real sensuality to it. He's sensual. You look good. You sound good. That's not what she says. She says, come out, because I like to spend time with you, and let's go walking through the beautiful garden. And he says, you're hot. That's what he says. It's a completely different idea between man and woman. There's a disconnect. She thinks that he's saying something that he's not yet saying.
How is this different than men from Mars and women from
Mars? Oh, you think that you should have returned the money on that book and bought this book instead, because that book is simply a copy of what's going on in here. There is no difference. The truth, and that's the Kedusha. I want you to say this Kedusha of the Sefer. And that goes to what you're saying also. A bad metaphor doesn't really, is a far cry from reality. But a good metaphor, an inspired metaphor, a holy metaphor, if you will, something that's inspired by God, I think gets very, very close to what human nature is all about, and then potentially what the nature between God and man is, I like to say. I should continue the passage, the end of chapter 2. There's, of course, more than we could possibly do in Shir Shirin. We could spend probably 6-7 weeks or at least to go through all of the imagery. Here I just want to give you taste. So I'll take you just to read the end of chapter 2. There's a very difficult pasuk. Echazulanu shualim. Go grab for us foxes. Shualim ktanim mechablim kramim. Little foxes that destroy our vineyards. Uchramenu smadar. But our vineyards are flowering. Very difficult to say who's speaking who. In fact, metaphorically, it's difficult to say who is speaking who. According to Rashi, he doesn't know who Shualim Tanim is. So Rashi says, remember the story about how the Jewish mothers used to hide their babies? So what did the Mitzrayim do to find out where the babies were? They would bring around their own babies, and then when their babies would cry, that would make the Jewish babies cry as well. You ever hear that? It's a famous Rashi brings it down in his commentary. They used to hide away their babies and try to get the babies not to cry. So the Egyptians knew if they wanted to find the male boys, they would bring their own children. Once one baby hears another baby crying, then that baby starts to cry as well. They say there's a boy, they throw him into the river. That's a famous metaphor. Rashi goes with it, and because he's having a hard time figuring out what Shualim Ktanim is, so what he says is something deep and spiritual. Mitzrayim got smeared by us. It did. So what this pasuk is trying to say is that even the children in Mitzrayim, even the babies, the innocent Mitzri Egyptian babies, were brought into the wholesale slaughter of Egypt to the point where it was hard to find a single clean hand. Even with a baby that has no knowledge of good and evil, were brought into the process of the evil of the destruction of the Jews in Mitzrayim. Now, it may be correct, it may not be correct, and Rashi is certainly struggling to find a metaphor. It's hard to say what it is. But the next line is easier to understand. Ad shefua chayom, until the wind blows, v'nasu hatzlalim, and the shadows flee. And by the way, what Eben Ezra says here, he disagrees with Rashi, I think what Eben Ezra says here is right. What that means is towards summer, when the shadows grow longer because the sun starts to move further away from that is towards the end of the summer. Sov, go away, she says to him. Demei lecha ledodi, letzvi, I want my love to be like a gazelle. Oh, the Ofer Hayalim were like another type of ram or gazelle, al Hare Vater, on the hills of separation. And what she's telling him something which is very interesting. He comes knocking. She thinks he's saying one thing. He says something else, and she's not ready for him. She's not ready for him. So she sends him away. Happens all the time in dating. It's a basic idea. It's not that it's not the right time. So she says, listen, I like you very much. We'll get there when we get there, but I'm not ready yet. So wait till the end of the summer. Wait till things start to sprout. Wait till things are more solidified. And that's when I'll see you later. The only problem is when you send a guy away, so sometimes he doesn't come back. And that's the next section, which I'd like to read to you. Al mishkavi balelot, she says. I was in my bed at night. Bikashti et shava nafshi. I looked for the one whom my soul loved. I was looking for him, but I could not find him. Akumana, so I got up. Vasovava ba'ir, and I started walking around in the city. Bashvakim uvarachovot, in the shuks and in the town squares. Avakshayat shava nafshi, let me look, or I look for the one whom my soul loves. Bikashti v'lom tzativ, I look for him, I can't find him. He's not near my house, he's not in my bed. And I went looking for the city, I can't find him. Mitzauni ha-shomerim ha-sovvim ba'ir. Who found me? The guardians of the city. Etshava nafshi ritem. So she says to them, quote, you have to watch. In Tanakh, you often get quotes. You have to watch quickly where the language changes. Quote, etshava nafshi ritem. Have you seen my love? And what do they answer? Nothing. There's silence. Kimat shavarti mehem. Just as I got by them, ad shematzati et shava nafshi, I found my love. Achazti v'lo arpenu, I grabbed him, and I will not let him go. Ad shahaveti v'al beiti me, until I bring him to my mother's house. V'yelcheder horati, I won't let him go until I bring him home to meet mom. Hishpati etchem b'no Yerushalayim, I make you swear, I adjure you, O children of daughters of Jerusalem, mitzvaot o vailot asadeh, in the name of gazelles or in these ayalim, these rams, im ta'iru v'im toru et avaj techbats, lest you wake up love until it's ready. Very difficult passage. But I have a question for you. When she's walking around the city and she finds her love, is it real or is it a fantasy? Has she found her love or is it a fantasy? What would seem to indicate real and what would seem to indicate? In the text itself, what seems to indicate reality and what seems to indicate fantasy? Achimatsati seems to indicate what? That she found him. That she actually found him. She certainly describes finding him. She also describes getting up out of her bed, apparently. But what describes the fantasy? So she does say Amishkavi below, but it could be she woke up for Amishkavi. There's something else which is very fantastical here. When she speaks to... What's that?
She holds on to him and doesn't let go.
Yeah, it's true. It is. Achativ l'arpenu. It's a... I mean, what does that really mean, that she dragged him all the way to the house? It's a very strange kind of thing. But there's also something going on. When she speaks to the... What? Yeah, with the B'nai Yerushalayim, it's not clear where they're coming from also. That's true. That's correct. Also, it seems a little metaphorical. Although B'nai Yerushalayim will show up four or five times in the text, so one could say it sort of stands outside the text, something that she said later. But what you're saying is absolutely right. But there's also something very fantasy-like. You ever have a dream and you speak to somebody and they don't talk back? So she goes over to the Shomerim and she says, hey, have you seen my love? And there's no answer. And not only that, take a look at the Shomerim, what they do. Verse 3, Mitzauni ha-Shomerim ha-Sovavim ba'ir. These Shomerim are wandering around the city, Sovavim ba'ir. Look for that word again. Take a look at verse 2. Akuma na va-Sovavah ba'ir. It's the same language that she uses for the guardians as well as herself. So that repetition creates a... What's that? It has a dreamlike... And in fact, in this case, who might the Shomerim be? Who are the Shomerim then? Now here I'm looking for the metaphor. I'm looking for the meaning behind the metaphor, but not the spiritual one. I'm trying to understand the love story. She's having a dream that she's walking around the city desperately, having one of those dreams that she's trying to find her love. And she finds these mute Shomerim, these Shomerim that won't speak to her, and they're doing the same thing that she does in the city. So who might they be? Others that are also looking for him? That's possible. It's certainly possible. But it could also be... It could be herself. Parts of herself. These guards that are looking for the city, pieces of herself that are looking but aren't helping her, that are interfering with her, perhaps, with her discovery. She asks them whether, hey, have you seen him? And these people who are doing the same thing in the city say, no, haven't seen. Well, they don't even say anything. They just refuse to answer. Which is?
Well, parts of herself that are trying to pull her away from connecting.
Right.
The evil inclination part.
There is a complex personality here. There's no doubt about it. And I think that this is essentially, she finds herself walking in, and she's got two parts. She has the people who are with her, and the people who are, she has the side of her that wants to go and have this relationship. and that she has decided that she's not so sure that she has wants a relationship. So she makes a decision, but it's in a dream. She never actually makes it happen. Later on, if you would, we go to the second dream sequence. So if you would, open up to chapter 5. Verse 2. The chapter should not start in chapter 5, verse 1. It should start in chapter 5, verse 2. Ani sheinavli b'er. Does everybody see it? It's on page 1266 in the art scroll. I am asleep, but my heart is awake. Kol dodi dofek. I hear the sound of my lover knocking. Pitchili achoti rayati yonati tamati. Open up for me, my sister, my friend, my dove, my pure one. And by the way, there the idea sister, again, sister is not, does not mean literally sister. It means love. It means my lover. Shiroshinim latalt, was the Tyrus say Laila. So she, again, he's speaking, but he's speaking through her ear. She's speaking, she's quoting him. Open up for me, because I'm dripping wet out here. Pashatati kutoti echach el bashena, rachatzi et raglai echach atanfeim. I'm in bed. How am I supposed to get up? My feet are washed. How am I supposed to get up? Now, I'm not sure if this is a dream or not. And by the way, in chapter 3, I'm not sure if it's a dream or not. It may be real. There are indications that it's real, and there are indications that it's a dream. Most Mepharshim say that both of these are dreams. But I agree with Eben Ezra, and I'll show you what the Eben Ezra says in a second. Dodi shalach adom en achor, he takes his, I guess, his hand away. He again, she says, I'm not ready to come out to you. So the guy says, listen, fine, later. Umei hamu alav, kamti ani liftoch l'dori. So I got up. Yadai not for more, vetsvodai more, overo kapot amanul. I reached to open up for him. I tried to open up the door. Patachti ani l'dodi v'dodi chama kavar. I open up the door and he's gone. Nafshi yatzav idabaro. My soul, it's leaving me because of what happened. It's hard to say what dabaro is. Bikashtihu v'lo mitzatiyu. Now, by the way, do you see the difference here? If you compare chapter 3, we had bikashtiv v'lo mitzativ. Here we have bikashtiv v'lo mitzativ, karativ v'lo anani. It's like a more powerful version of what we saw before. Before it was, let me quote the words directly. Before it was, al mishkavi balilok, bikashtiv et shava nafshi, I searched for the one whom my soul loved, bikashtiv v'lo mitzativ. This is much more emphatic. There's a greater, the stress is greater. Back there, she was pretty stressed out because she told him to go. He came to his house when she told him to go. But this is the second rejection. The second, not rejection, but the second, I'm not ready for you. Now Rashi says, what does it mean that my feet were dirty? That is, I had too much of Avodah Zarah on my feet. But I don't want to try to uncover what the spiritual meaning is. I'm just trying to understand the relationship between, what is the relationship between a man and a woman? And if I could try to master that, then maybe I could get some sense of the relationship between man and God. Or how to get a handle on the relationship of man and God. So she says here much more powerfully, Pitachti ani l'dodi, in verse 6 of chapter 5, on page 1266, v'dodi chamak avar, nafshi yatzav v'dabaro, my love, my soul is gone as he walked out. This is much more stressful than that dream. Bikashtihu v'lo mitzatihu, karativ v'lo anani, I yelled out, where are you, and nobody answered me. That's a much more, I think it's more desperate. Mitzauni ashomarim, you remember these guys? But then, Hasovavim ba'ir. Now keep in mind, they're sovavim ba'ir, but she wasn't. Never says that she was sovavim ba'ir. They're the ones that I remember from beforehand, but beforehand they were mute, and now look what happens. Hikuni tsauni. They slapped me. They drew blood. Nasuet redidi me'alai. They took off my jewelry. Shomrei achomot, the guardians of the gate. They probably thought she was some kind of harlot wandering the streets because she's dressed up in her fancy clothes running after love, where are you? And they think that she's some kind of crazy woman, and they give her a good slapping. Now obviously that's not, the question is, what is the meaning behind it? What is that slap? Who are the shomrim? Because it's not God. God is the lover, so we have to try to figure out who the shomrim is. So Rashi would say it would be the Romans at this time, or the Greeks actually at this time. She comes looking for them, and the Romans tell her, listen, your lover doesn't want you, and take off all your things, and all the things that you pray to God, and you'll be praying to us now, you'll be praying to our gods. But what the meaning
Why
is...
Why wouldn't it be her own character flaws? Why wouldn't it be the things, her fears, that would prevent her?
It could be, but this sounds much more physical. In fact, what I want to say about Ibn Ezra is Ibn Ezra doesn't think the second part is a dream at all. Ibn Ezra thinks the first one is a dream, and this one is the actualization of the fears that she was afraid of. But here, the Shomrim are not just the Shomrim don't just ignore her. They're actively trying to hurt her, to keep her from being able to discover what she wants. And she turns after she gets beaten up a little bit by... You could, of course. I don't know what the right answer is. What you're saying is right. This could also be a dream, and this is just herself, but working more actively against her. But the way I see this is she actually gets up out of bed. I see this as a real part of the love story. That is, she's out of bed now. Her knock, she gets up, she doesn't go to the door, she takes too long, she sees the guy pull away, she runs to the door, she can't come out, and she heaves herself into the street looking for the love. And who hasn't? I mean, is that something that's so strange? Having a love that gets away from you, and then you start to run around the streets, take subways, try to find the love, and go crazy trying to find the person. I mean, it's something that everybody more or less has experienced in one form or another. I think it's something that very much speaks to the person.
But on a different level, isn't it us always trying to connect to the divine
and never
quite?
Yes. Yeah, but here it's because we didn't. In this case, if you're going to metaphorize that way, it's because somehow we were content. We were comfortable in bed. I mean, again, I'm going to give you one possible metaphor. You have to come up with your own. That's why I'm only working on the literal translation. I can't tell people what the metaphor means because I don't know. I can't tell somebody what the meaning is between the relationship between God and man. However, if you ask me and I were to say, and I don't know I'm right, I would say it was complacency. I wouldn't go with the dirt on the feet like Rashi. I would say it's that complacency. I'm in bed, I'm comfortable, I'm sleeping, I got a comfortable pillow, and you want to come in the middle of the night and pull me out? I don't know, ask me to make aliyah or ask me to go to shul. I don't want to make things too, it becomes too simplistic when you try to, unfortunately it's better when you don't try to actualize it. But I think, to my mind, it's the conflict between comfort, which allows us to say, yeah, I love you, God, but I'm sleeping here. I'm comfortable. But then when you see that God is not just going to say, oh, okay, I'll come back to you later. When she realizes that Rashi says it's a rejection of God. I don't think it's a rejection of God. I think it's an acceptance of the fact that I'm comfortable, God will wait. And when she realizes that that's wrong, she realizes what a dangerous thing that she did. And then she and runs after it. There's that old phrase, if you love something, let it go because it will come back to you. I'm not sure that's true, and I'm sure that Shlomo Melch doesn't think that's true. I'm sure that Shlomo thinks that if you let something get away from you, sometimes it leaves forever, even if the love was real.
Are you saying it's against the Torah thought to think if something is for you, it won't go by you?
What do you mean?
Well, I've always thought if something's meant for you, it's not going to go by
you. I would say that is not Shlomo's thought here at all. I don't want to say the Torah's thought. I don't think Shlomo thinks that love is such a simple thing that you're guaranteed it if it's real. There's no doubt that these people love each other. What is in doubt is whether their complacency or whether their impatience is going to destroy their love. Destroy it completely. And I do not think it's a sure bet, and I think that's what Shlomo is trying to say. I do not believe that he's speaking. I'm sorry, what? Do you mind if I... Absolutely, and I'm focusing on the. I am focusing on the woman here.
For me, it's a much more comfortable one to understand and to relate to in the way that, you know, we misinterpret sometimes God's ways as she misinterpreted how God appeared, how her beloved appeared before her. But the other one is very hard for me to relate to. How are we to understand God's relationship with Bnei Yisrael as a in that physical?
Right, correct.
That more
I agree. I'm sorry, I took the easy way out. I just figured people... I went with the woman, perhaps because she gets more press time. Let me see if I can get to the man. I'm going to finish up these small ideas, and then I'll try to get to the man. Not that I have any answers, by the way. Believe me, I don't have any answers. I gave you a small piece of the man, which was a weird communication. She's describing how God wants to seduce her and bring her out to the guy, and then he's like, come on, you have a nice voice. You look nice. Let's go. It's a much more impatient, you know, let's just get back to brass tacks. The question is that how really God feels? I don't know. But we'll do a little more. So we only have 5 minutes left. So if I could just press questions, not that I...
The real part here,
yeah.
When you're talking about Shlomo, the pragmatic part of my brain is saying, well, here's a man who had 800 women. How does this fit in?
The question is is the historical nature of Shlomo. When you learn Kohelet to ignore his 1,000 wives... That would be a mistake. But to learn Shir HaShirim, it may be important to ignore those wives because it's not clear that Shir HaShirim has any historical or autobiographical reference whatsoever. But we only have 5 minutes, so I'm just going to rush through a little bit because there's some funny stuff here that I want to show you just for the sake of see how clever it is. So he goes, Yishpati etchem b'no Yushlayim, im timsu et zodi. This is different. So again, here again, Leah, you know, she runs into these girls, which appear out of nowhere. It's hard to say why. But now she tries to bring them in. She doesn't just swear them not to bother her, but now, because she's more desperate, I think, perhaps, she's trying to say, help me out. Im timsu et zodi. If you find my love, matagidu lo. You know what you should say to him? It doesn't mean what will you say to him. It means I want you to say, this is what I want you to say to him. Shecholat avani. I'm lovesick. So they go, Madodech midod hayafam reshim. What is so nice about your aroma? What makes your guy so special? Madodech shekacha yishpatanu. So she says, oh, my love is this, and he's that, his eyes are like this, his eyes are like that. So for the next 6 or 7 psukim, she describes how beautiful and how amazing to these girls, because they want to say, hey, what does he look like? How are we going to find him? Well, fine, we'll find him for you. Tell us what he looks like. So look what happens in chapter 6. I'll finish off the last thing she says in verse 16 of chapter 5. Chiko mamtakim, his mouth is like sweets. Kulo machamadim. Do you recognize that from the Eben Ezra from last week? If you were here, that was what the Eben Ezra quoted. Zed dodi, this is my love. Vizerei, this is my friend. Beno Yushlayim. So they say, it's very funny. Anna halach dodech hayofav anashim. So where did your love go, O beauteous woman? Anna fana dodech. Do you recognize this word fana? We had it before in chapter 2. Fana means to turn away from. They're very nasty, these women. Where did your lover go to? Where did your lover turn away from? Unvakshenu imach. Oh, tell us where he is. We'll go hunting him with you. It's nasty, isn't it? Oh, yeah, you described it. This sounds pretty exciting to me. Why don't you tell us about the guy who left you, and we'll go searching with him for you. So what does she say? Dodi yarad l'ganol arugata bosem. He went down to his garden, to the fields of spices. Lirot paganim l'kot shoshanim. Ani l'dodi v'dodi li haroeh b'shoshanim. Do you see the interplay that's going on here? She describes, she wants other people, perhaps the nations of the world, perhaps her subcontinent. It's hard to say. And she says, help me find this guy. He's this beautiful. And they say, oh, if he's that beautiful and he turns away from you, I'll tell you what, we'll go with you and we'll see how things work out. And she says, no. Neither dodi v'dodi li haroeh b'shoshanim. I am mine and my lover is yours. Don't you think you could step into this relationship? It's very powerful. It's in literal terms. It's a beautiful idea. The question is then how to metaphorize into spiritual terms. I don't know. Look at Rashi. Look at Eben Ezra. Look at all the possibilities. But to understand the nastiness going on here. And then she realizes she's given too much of herself. She's gone looking for help and she's realizing the place that she's gone for looking for help by allowing it to be non-exclusive, that she needs to reinforce the exclusivity because she's put herself at risk, which is a tremendous idea. And we only have exactly 1 minute and I don't... Let me do the husband. Let me do the husband once. The love. And maybe get a sense of him on that. Okay, but I don't want to. But I'm afraid I may make some people feel uncomfortable. Some people feel uncomfortable today. But I'll just read a few lines of the lover's stuff, of the love stuff. In verse 4 of chapter 6, which is on page 1267. Yafat rayati kitirtsah, you're beautiful like the city of Tirtsah. Navak Yerushalayim, you're pleasant like Jerusalem. Ayumaka nidgalot, you are fearful like the nidgalot. We'll see what those mean in a second. Hasebi enayach minegdi, turn your eyes away from me, Shehem here hivuni, because you know when a girl gives you that look. I'm sorry, to old guys here. I guess it's the other way. Girl gives you that look, and you're like, wow. Your heart starts to palpitate a little bit. Now here, I have a little bit of a problem, Judy, because how does that? If that's God, what does God mean by saying that when Israel looks at him directly, that it's so shocking to him that he wants her to be a little more indirect. Does that mean that God is affected by our love towards him? I don't know what to tell you. It is much more difficult. I don't have any answers. I wish I did. We could open up Rashi. We could take a look and see what Rashi says. But it won't give us a deep meaning. It will give us a historical meaning. Your hair is like a flock of sheep that come down from the Gilad. They're like a flock of sheep because they're very white that come up from the wash. Again, it's hard to say. Perhaps God is impressed here. Rashi would say that God is impressed by the structures of the Beit HaMikdash because we built him a Beit HaMikdash. That God is impressed by the smoothness of the stones. That it's the fact that the girl is trying to make herself as beautiful as possible that impresses God so much. I don't know. Here, maybe Dr. Gadi Cohen's idea is right, that God is trying to give us a sense that he loves us through the land of Israel. I don't know. Shishim heima malachot u'shmonim pilagshim. Now this sounds a little bit more like Shlomo, except he didn't have 60 queens and 80 princes. He had 800 wives and 200 concubines. So it's hard to say that this is autobiographical, which is why I usually say that it does not help to know about Shlomo's life to know what's going on here. Va'alamot ein mispar, an unlimited amount of young ladies. Achat hi yonati tamati. She is like no other. Achat hi li'ima barahi li'yoladata. Now the question here is, who's the mother? Who is the mother of the Jewish people? Is it Avram? Is it Aver? Is it God himself who's playing the role of both the mother as well as the husband? But what God is saying here is, I want you to know something. There is nobody like you. There is nobody as individual as you. Everybody looks around you and they see you and they praise you. They say, look at the Jewish people. That's solid. This is a quote of those women. Who is it who glows like the morning? Yafa kalavana, beautiful like the moon. Bara, pure, kachama, like the sun. Ayuma ka nidgalot. There's the word nidgalot again, which sandwiches this phrase. Nidgalot in this case is the Pleiades. The Pleiades, it's a very obvious constellation called the Pleiades, and that's called the Nidgalot. Perhaps because it looks like a standard, I don't know why, but it's well known. El ginate goes yaradati. Now here we have a big problem. I don't even know who's talking. We have no idea who's talking here. Is the guy still talking? Is the girl talking? I went down to my garden of nuts. Yarat lirot bi beha nachal. I wanted to see the fruits growing from the tree. Ibe from the word av, aviv. Lirot haparcha hagefen aneitzu arimonim. And this gets back to the other idea. She wasn't ready yet. Remember back in spring, he said, listen, everything is starting to bloom and blossom. She wasn't ready yet. But now, she seems to be saying, let me go down and see whether summertime's come. Let me see if the fruit are ready. Because maybe now I'm ready for the relationship. Lo yadati nafshi samani markabot Abin Adiv. It's hard to say. I did not know my soul placed me amongst the chariots of Abin Adiv. Hard to say what that means. Now, I don't know if I answered the question. I don't know what the man is saying here exactly. The man gets less press time than the woman. And we're out of time, and I don't want to, God forbid, I don't want to hold anybody back. I do want to read the last two sentences, though. The last sentence. He's speaking, and he says, on page 1268, Hayoshevet Baganim, you, we know he's speaking because Yoshevet is feminine. Sometimes you can tell, usually you can tell, sometimes you can't. Oh, you who sit among the gardens, Chavirim, Makshivim, Lekolech, there are friends listening to your voice. Now the question is, who are the friends, metaphorically? Hashmi'ini, listen to me. Birach dodi, run away, my love. Now she seems to be talking. Udmei lecha litzvi la'ofra hayalim al harei b'samim. Run away and be like a gazelle on the hills of spices. Which means she's telling him to go away again. So where does it end? So for Rashi, it's not a problem, because Rashi says this was written specifically in exile. But it's a little uncomfortable that this love story essentially ends without conclusion. There are ways to fix it. You could say like this, Hayoshevet baganim chavirim mekshivim lekalei hashmi'ini, and say, he's telling her to say, v'rach dodi u'demei lecha l'tzviel ofralim ahari b'samim. Why? Because they're people listening. They're having a love affair, but it's a private love affair, and God doesn't want to get other people involved. So she tells to the girl, pretend that you don't like me. That'll make the other guys not get suspicious. Tell me to go away, and then we'll meet later on in the Harei B'Samim. What's that? You don't like that so much? What's that? In what sense? Well, what it's saying is that verse 14, what I'm trying to say is Ibn Ezra's approach is that verse 14 is him telling her what to do, because all the Chavirim are listening and interfering with their relationship. We skipped all that interference, as it's in chapter 7, that he had to tell her to pretend that she doesn't still love him, that really she does, and that after she pretends not to love him, they'll stop. The reason why they're so upset with her, the other nations or the other women are trying to interfere because they think there's a relationship. So pretend that we have a no relationship. They'll stop bugging us, and then we can meet later on. Although we never meet that meeting up later on afterwards. Could be, you could do it. Believe me, you could do that. That's the trick. So I don't know really. I mean, again, I have no answers for Shir Shirim. Just the flow of the poetry, the flow of the relationship, the cute little asides, the relationship between people. All of that is important to master. And then afterwards, once you've mastered that, if it's possible to master that, to then go looking for either the one referent or the many referents that are behind the imagery. And that's essentially what I have.
Thank you.
Very welcome. Thank you for coming.